Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and knew what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio.
Big names, big sports talk.
The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
And we are so glad you're with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And yes, March Madness, it is here, but it is time to survey the NBA landscape. We're going to provide a progress report on how things are shaping up in the Western Conference. This week in the spotlight is the Dallas Mavericks. And always our go-to guy when the shot clock is winding down is one of the very best in the business, the Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell. And Mark, I have to confess that your name came up in my conversation earlier this week with the former president and general manager of the Dallas Mavericks, Norm Sanju. We were talking about, hey, who are some of the upcoming guests on my program? I rattled off your name and a long list of superlatives followed from him. He said, you are a dream announcer, as good as it gets, the voice, the delivery, a very special talent. So how's that intro? Forget the three cups of coffee. I know that's going to amp you up.
Well, I tell you, that's great to hear. Obviously, I have a ton of respect for Norm Sanju. His resume in the NBA and in basketball speaks for itself. I mean, number one, just you couldn't find a classier gentleman than Norm Sanju. And look, he is an instrumental figure in why the Mavs are in Dallas. I don't know that a lot of people know, just a quick aside to that, but back in 1978, Norm Sanju was working for the Buffalo Braves. Yeah. And the Buffalo Braves were owned by, at that time, John Y. Brown, who was the Kentucky Fried Chicken magnet. And he was going to sell the team, and Norm Sanju was going to go on, or Norm Sanju had agreed to move the team after the 1978 season to Dallas, and they were going to go. Well, the ended up trading franchises with Irv, who ended up with the Boston Celtics. 11 got the Celtics, 11 had a movie studio in Empire, Southern California. He wanted to move his Buffalo Braves closer to Southern California. They became the San Diego Clippers, and ultimately he sold them to Donald Sterling and now to the Los Angeles Clippers. So where does Norm Sanju figure into this? Well, the Buffalo Braves didn't get moved to Dallas to become the Express, but of course he worked very, very diligently with city leaders in Dallas, then the mayor Bob Folsom and Don Carter, and we got a team out of it. So that's that just is one of the many stories about how hard Norm worked to bring basketball to Dallas. So nice to hear those things that he had to say, and back at him, because like I said, instrumental figure and the reason why we're all here today, and what a great job he did for almost two decades as the president of the Mavs.
Well, Mark, I'm so glad we're opening up our conversation with being reflective, because I have to tell you, I had the opportunity to spend the entire afternoon with him, and it was such a pleasure just kind of gaining that historical perspective, how it all began as far as in terms of with the organization. And it really, I started covering the Mavericks midway through the 2011 season, and it just gave me a deeper sense of appreciation of what you guys were able to accomplish, and just the leadership of Mark and Donnie and Rick, and how it's all come together, and just the invaluable contributions of what you're talking about, guys from the past, whether it's been in the front office to, Rolando Blackman and Brad Davis, and of course, Jason Kidd. That was one of Norm Sanju. He was very proud to talk about him, too.
Well, I think one of the great things about the Mavs of now is that there's a tremendous respect for those who paved the way. And people all understand what Rolando and Derek and Brad and those players in the 80s meant to this thing. They understand what Norm and Rick Sund and Dick Motta and Don Carter, Mr. C. Look, there was no greater gesture made than what happened in Miami, June 12, 2011, when
Absolutely.
The Mavs won, and Mark had Don Carter up on stage to accept the trophy from David Stern, the Larry O'Brien trophy. So there is great work being done by the decision-makers of the now, but like I said, I think one of the real neat things about the Maverick family is that there's a great respect for those who have gone before us, and It's like I said, it's players, it's executives. We all appreciate the fact that one of the great announcers in NBA history and a Hall of Famer and a guy who, regrettably we lost not too long ago, Jim Durham, was the TV announcer for the Mavericks. And unfortunately, it was during some bleak years in the 90s. But, what a better guy to have calling your broadcast, someone who used to call the world champion Chicago Bulls and longtime on ESPN as well. So that's you know, there is, like I said, just a tremendous respect for those who have come before with this Mavs organization now.
It is always a pleasure when Mark Folwell is dropping by on the Big East Sports Show. Of course, he needs no introduction. The Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer. And let's segue now, Mark. Let's talk about the present. Of course, the season in many ways, in many respects, it really has been a roller coaster ride. It's been tough, as you're talking about, especially for Dirk and for Sean, when you've experienced, you've tasted great success, and then you're in this new chapter, this rebuilding phase. But I have to tell you, I've been very impressed. We have just witnessed many times just the countless examples of the resolve that they've shown. They're not retreating, and how they continue to respond to adversity and look it in the eye.
You know, it's funny. I was watching a shoot around in New Orleans recently. They were down there February the 21st or 2nd or something like that, I believe was the date of the game. And something struck me during that shoot around watching them. And that was that I really, really felt like a lot of what you were talking about there, that this has been a challenging, difficult season. But the one thing I will say about it is that I feel like that this group has stuck together. They've been clearly disappointed by the losing, and they've shown the appropriate amount of disappointment, but they've also been able to show and keep the appropriate amount of being able to stay upbeat when you need to be upbeat, definitely stay together. And, you know, look, they've tried to keep plugging away and tried to keep the train on the tracks. And it's been a really challenging season, but I do think that there has been a certain unity and collective spirit that's tried to bring them through some of the tough times. And there have been some games where they've been successful. Unfortunately, there have been other examples and more of them where they haven't been. But one thing you can say is there hasn't been finger-pointing. There hasn't been a fracturing of the locker room. There hasn't been guys that are doing their own thing and worried about stats and worried about, well, I'm a free agent this offseason, so that's what I've got to focus on. So they've kept it together in that regard, and they've had some pretty nice wins this year. 27-33 through 60 games clearly isn't where you want to be, but you know, we all understand that Dirk missing a huge chunk of the season is at the top of the list for why this thing is where it is, among other things. But they've, to their credit, tried to keep plugging away and keep getting better.
Well, Mark, it's certainly, you think about head coach Rick Carlisle and his staff, it's not been easy. You're working twice as hard and you're getting half the results, but you really have to admire. I go back to my conversation with Norm Sanjo. I said, have you ever met head coach Rick Carlisle? And he said, I have never met him. It really has been a vicarious thrill. He said he just loves his disposition and his cerebral, his no-nonsense approach. He doesn't get too high on highs and low on lows. His feet are always on the ground, but he continues to have these guys pressing forward. And I watched online at Mavs.com, you know, Monday after that devastating loss against Houston on the road. I mean, head coach Rick Carlisle, he said, I'm a resilient guy. And they were back at practice and being steadfast and putting that stake in the ground and not wavering.
You know, that's a Rick word right there, resilient and resourceful and perseverance and persistence.
Yeah.
Those are all words that Rick really embraces, and it's more than just lip service. He really believes that and feels that way. And you know, I've been on your show many times before, Alyssa. I think you know this. I'm a Carlisle believer, big time, and the type of person he is, his management of people, his basketball savvy, his psychological and intellectual approach to the game, tremendous fan of who he is and what he does and how he's handled things over the course of five seasons here. So, look, he is a stay-the-course guy, and as you pointed out, not too high with the high and low with the lows, but if you're going to survive in this league, if you are prone to wild swings of emotion and stay in those places for a long period of time, then the grinds and the fact that it's a long season and there are going to be highs and there are going to be lows, if you live those too much, then this league's just going to wear you out because the seasons are so long and so challenging. But Rick tries to keep an even keel and stay the course and keep everybody focused. And I know a lot of that stuff sounds cliche, but those are principles that work. They're tested year in, year out, and they do demonstrate over the long haul that if you follow them, more than likely you've got a shot to have some success. You know, you never know how the ball is going to bounce in a game, but if you follow those principles that Carlisle's tried to establish year in, year out with this thing, then most nights and most seasons, I like your chances.
Well, the Dallas Mavericks certainly have tremendous leadership, as we're talking about head coach Rick Carlisle. they've had to learn, Mark, and you've seen this many times, they've had to learn some really hard lessons, you know, those costly miscues late in games, but they got the nice bounce, the sweet bounce on Wednesday night against Houston. You love how they have just continued to respond. And I have to share, I'm really optimistic, even going, you know, you stay in the present, but you look ahead, and some of these young guys that they've got in. I mean, Jay Crowder, we had a chance to kind of visit, and I said, you know, what has it been like to make that transition from college? Because, of course, you guys are going to be in Milwaukee next week, and, of course, he played at Marquette. What's it been like to make that transition from college to the next level? And he said that his dad told him just to absorb and be like a sponge. Glean as much information as you can from Dirk and from Sean and from Vince Carter. And he said that's what he's trying to do. And I know there's been some inconsistency there, but at times we really see how he's going to be a special player, I think, in the league.
I certainly think he's on the line to have a nice career for himself, that's for sure. Yeah, there are certain deficiencies that he has, but the thing that Rick has always said is that with the Mavericks and with his coaching style, it's not about what you can't do, it's about what you can do. And so they're going to look to try to find ways to maximize the good things that he brings to the floor. I know that he's got a great work ethic, and I know that after he endured a really, really bad slump shooting from the perimeter in November and December, late November and early December, where he missed 17 straight threes at one point, he's just a skosh over 40% as a three-point shooter since the calendar rolled over to 2013. So that's a nice bounce back and a nice improvement for Jay Crowder. There are certainly things that he's going to have to work on in the offseason. I would assume that he'll probably end up playing summer league, so there'll be a chance for him to improve some aspects of his game. But I feel like the Mavs have found themselves a role player. And if you can get a rotation role player at the 34th pick of the draft, then you've usually done pretty well for yourself. If you look at the history of drafts in the last 10 years, for example, and you looked at the top 10 picks of the second round, the average would say that in any given year, you're probably going to find about three guys who stick for any significant length of time and have a significant career in the NBA, hang on for a few years and play a little bit. So if the Mavs have hit with the two of their picks, you know, Bernard James was on that range as well, but if they've hit with one, that would be nice. If they hit with two, that would be even better. And I feel like that, like I said, Jay certainly, to me, appears like he's on track to have a nice career as a role player in this league.
The great Mark Folwell is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer. You can listen to this entire interview at eradiosports.com. Just click on our podcast. And Mark, I'm going to just not be journalistic right now. I'm going to tell you who one of my favorite players is on this Dallas Mavericks team, and that is Brandon Wright. I love his level of consistency. He does have that be-ready mentality, but he is, you're talking about reserve players. I mean, I would love for him to continue to be a part of this organization. And he just, I mean, he started the other night against Houston, and I thought his stat line was terrific.
Well, he had 12 points in 27 minutes, and that was really nice. That was he gave Dallas a needed lift in that game, only starting for the 12th time this year. But he's on his way to playing a career high in games and likely a career high in minutes played, total minutes played this year, as he continues to try to carve out a niche for himself in the league. Again, I think we're looking at a guy who has a future. He has obvious strengths. He's incredibly efficient offensively. Is very, very skilled at scoring the ball, especially finishing strong around the basket. So an efficient offensive player. He has a slight frame, so it gets him into trouble defensively. He does have leaping ability, so he is a good help defender as a shot blocker. And rebounding most nights this year has been an area where he hasn't excelled. He had a little stretch there where he got better at it in January and February, but it's not a strength of his game. But he certainly has strengths for sure in terms of offensive efficiency, and I think he's another guy that's a very nice situational, can score a lot in a short amount of time and be really, really efficient on the offensive end. And if you've got a big guy who can do that and can block some shots like he can do and is at least a mobile defender, not a strong one, but at least he's a mobile defender, then that's something I think that you can certainly use going forward.
Mark, I do want you to give us a brief update on Dirk. I mean, for most of this season, it really has been like training camp. In fact, I was down in Tampa and I had a chance to watch the Orlando telecast, and Vince Carter was talking about Dirk and just his admiration for him, but that also that in many ways that this season that, you know, he's just had to get healthy and it has been like a training camp for him. So I think what I appreciate about him, yes, we're seeing his scoring totals up, but I was fired up even after that Milwaukee loss, 20 rebounds. I mean, you got to love it when a guy's pursuing the ball like that, and he's a really good defensive rebounder.
Oh, it's really one of the things that he's that's a trademark of his career, his defensive rebounding.
I agree.
And he's There are a few offensive rebounds mixed in there, but he's closing in very, very soon here in the not-too-distant future. Before the end of the month of March, I think he's on pace for this to get to 9,000 career rebounds, and that's something that less than 50 people in the history of the league have done. So pretty impressive number for Dirk there. His scoring is up with the Maverick win over Houston on Wednesday night the 6th. Through the last seven games, he had scored 20 or better in five of them, and includes the 22 points he had in the Mavs' recent win over the Rockets, like we were just talking about on Wednesday night the 6th. So the numbers are getting better, the health is getting better, the legs are feeling better. Some of these nights recently we're seeing the old Dirk, and or at least something pretty darn close to the old Dirk. So that bodes really well for the future, because Dirk's talked about the desire to play a couple of more seasons after his contract runs out in 2014, and having Dirk here is clearly an important piece to the puzzle for why the team has played better, even though they've had some tough losses, but they certainly have looked better since the dark days of late December, mid to late December and early January, when Dirk still wasn't anywhere close to being back to what the Mavs had hoped and expected for him to be. So there are certainly positive signs for Dirk in terms of reestablishing himself as a very good player and a centerpiece for what the Mavs hope to be able to accomplish in the offseason and the kind of team they want to be able to put on the floor next year and going forward.
As we get ready to close out our interview, Mark, just quickly for all the listeners out there, for the Dallas Maverick fans, that preview the upcoming games, the importance of that, because they really do have to have that mentality. They've got to finish strong.
Oh, well, I mean, no question. Look, they've got a road trip that's going to take them to Detroit and Milwaukee and Minnesota and San Antonio. There are a couple of teams on that road trip with a losing record, and a team that they probably feel like they have a little payback in store for, with Milwaukee, a team that beat them on their home floor in late February. So those hopefully will prove to be at least a couple of winnable games, and then they're going to come home and play 8 out of 9 from the 15th of March, starting with Cleveland here, a long homestand with Oklahoma City, with Brooklyn, with Boston, with Utah, with the Clippers, and Indiana and Chicago. 8 out of 9 are at home in a home stretch from the 15th of March all the way through the end of the month. And then there's another 4-game road trip in April out west, and then 4 out of the last 5 games for the Mavs are at home. So look, everybody realizes what the math is. The math is very, very difficult in terms of trying to lift themselves up into the top 8 of the Western Conference, and the playoff probability forecasts and simulators put the odds very, very long right now. But I think the best thing for them to do is stay in the moment, and we'll see how the upcoming road trip looks for them, if they can take advantage of beating a couple of teams with losing records and then flourish in a long stretch of games at home. I know they were hopeful of doing that recently when they played 7 out of 8 at home, but only went 5-3 in that stretch. And the problem was that the problem that they've had a lot this year is closing out close games. If the light can go on and they can win some close home games, because I'm sure given the caliber of opponent, there will be some close home games in the month of March, but if the light can go on and they can consistently win some of those, then you never know. They could string some wins together and make a push for the 43 or 44 wins that they would probably need to try to sneak into the playoffs. It's a very, very difficult task, and it's going to take a great finish to the season. And everyone understands that the odds are long, but Rick Carlisle is going to hold this team to a level of expectations of preparing to play hard and win every game, and accountability. So they're going to keep plugging away, and we'll see how the last 5 weeks or so of the season transpires.
Well, it is a formidable challenge, but I tell you what, when O.J. Mayo, the type of performance that he put in on Wednesday night, and head coach Rick Carlisle said it was his best game of the season, you never know what can happen if everybody gets together and is playing in harmony.
Well, we will see. We'll certainly see, The basketball gods may owe them a few with some of the disappointing close losses they've had. We'll see. But I'm excited to see and anxious to see how the team responds to whatever these situations are going to unfold here in the last 22 games. There's still always things, whether they're in the race, in the thick of it, can lift themselves back into the thick of it or not. I still think there are things that can be of value and things that can be learned from the last 22 games of the season.
Okay, the great Mark Folliwell has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Mark, tell all the listeners where they can go and get their MAV tickets.
214-747-MAVS, of course, definitely. Check in with that. They're online at mavs.com, and season tickets are for sale. And, as we talked about on the broadcast recently, they sawed up the hardwood floor.
Yes, I saw that.
The first 11 years of American Airlines Center, including the championship season. and a piece of the floor got distributed to season ticket holders this year as a little souvenir and a little appreciation of their fandom of the Mavericks. So that's another reason to jump on the board, because I really feel like, you know, however the rest of this year plays out, better days are ahead.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, safe travels. We appreciate you coming on. And real quick, did you have a good birthday?
You're so kind. I did. It was nice. So, you know, it's always a sobering reality when your mom tells you she can't believe how much how old you are, and when you have to put in a new age on the cardio equipment at the gym.
Oh, that's true. Or on the scale too, right?
Hey, what are you gonna do?
Okay, Mark. Well, listen, we'll talk to you again real soon. Take care.
All right. See you, Alyssa. Take care.
You bet. We're gonna step aside. Much more straight ahead. We're getting ready to talk some college football with Jason Peter in our Under the Helmet segment. Get ready. Hi, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter. Under the Helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
The show continues on this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. It's always a pleasure when we can welcome in Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And boy, big news coming out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Bo Pelini, who would have thought it would have been kind of quiet, you know, as they're kind of easing into spring practice, but that is not the case. Bo Pelini shaking things up with Huskers practice. I'm just going to segue and hand the baton off to you that way, Jason. Fill us in. What's going on up there?
I tell you what, there's a lot of people that don't know how to react to this.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're hearing two, I think, opinions or feelings on the whole thing. One is that people think it's great that it's showing this other side of Bo. And certainly, I think the way that Bo has been portrayed and I think rightly so, is that he's a hothead on the sidelines, and it's just a matter of time before, you know, he just explodes right there in front of everybody. So there's a lot of people that feel like, oh, this is great. It's showing this fun side, this side that, you know, we hear so much from the players. And then you're getting the other side of things where people are saying, really? Really, you have time to do the Harlem Shake with the team, but you know, did you forget you had 70 put up on you in the Big Ten championship game, and there were a few other times in the 2012 season where teams were either in the 60s or 70s. So you know, maybe a little less dancing and a little more coaching is what a lot of people are saying. And I gotta be honest. I'm kind of in that ballpark as well, too. I think you're not at that point where you can kind of just, you know, take some time off and you know, orchestrate some dance routine. And, you know, it goes back even to last spring when there were some bad storms here in Lincoln when the spring game was supposed to be played. So it ended up getting canceled, but he also, and this was made public news, was that he gave the kids the opportunity to come back and play the game, you know, maybe like the next Monday or something, or even have another practice. And they said no which was shocking, and he actually let them say no, which was even more shocking, because you're just not at that point. And maybe it's just me, because the way that Coach Osborne and every other coach that I've had over the course of my playing career, if there's an opportunity for you to go out on that field and get better, then I can guarantee, I'm not even going to give you a percentage, 100% sure that every one of those coaches would have made you go out there and get some work done. They're just not at a area yet where they can take time off or goof off or make Harlem Shake videos. I mean, really, if you're looking for some PR, I imagine that the University of Nebraska football office, the athletic fund, they should be able to put something together that's a little more entertaining or something that would perk some recruits' ears up a little better than the Harlem Shake.
Well, Jason, you know, when I heard about the story with Bo Pelini, I just, you know, I think about his sideline demeanor, and it just seems so uncharacteristic of him that he would do that. And like you said, I mean, you would think that his focus would be on what do we need to do to improve, or perhaps, you know, maybe he wants the guys to kind of loosen up a little bit more and have a little bit more fun. I mean, you certainly wouldn't see Tom Osborne doing that.
No, and that's absolutely, it's part of it. There's got to be a connection. If you want these players to run through wall after wall for you, there's got to be a level of trust. There's got to be some sort of bond there. And I understand establishing those things. But, a lot of that stuff just should be done behind closed doors, not with a video camera up there. And I would find it very, very hard to believe Nick Saban would be orchestrating a Harlem Shake video with his team after the first day of spring practice. I just, if you want to be champion, then act like a champion. If you want to be a middle of the road and kind of well, let's go to Nebraska because, you know, at least they have fun there. They may not win any championships, but we'll do the Harlem Shake at least once a year. Then that's perfect. But, the program that I want, the program that I know, is one that competes for championships. So,
well, Jason, let me jump in here. I mean, so how has the team responded to that? I mean, does Coach Pelini, does he like the effort as spring practices open?
So far, the first day they didn't have pads on, and everybody looks great without pads on. They have a lot of young guys, especially on defense. Offense will have to carry this team, but if defense doesn't step up, the front four they're going to have basically one returning starter, and in a defensive end, Jason Ankra, who, you know, I don't know if you can even consider anybody a returning starter because, they got abused pretty bad last year. So nobody's job should be safe or nobody should be considered returning. That implies that they're going to be out there as a starter. But all young guys up front, and maybe it's a good thing. Maybe there'll be some guys that can make some plays. But I know when you have a lot of youth out there, there's also going to be a lot of mistakes made. And with what teams are doing now, more of the spread and putting a lot of guys in motion, and you're going to have to not only know what the other team's doing, but everything that you have on your plate in terms of checks and responsibilities with coverage and run fits and everything else. So anytime you put young guys out there, and all three linebackers will be new young guys. They're losing everybody there, and they lose their two safeties. Now, they're big on their two guys at the safety position that they really like, Charles Jackson and the other one, Mosise, I think. But we'll have to wait and see. Everybody can look good when they're without pads on.
We're quickly running out of time. Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, go to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. This entire interview is being sponsored and powered by our very good friends at Mercer Well Service. They do such a great job. Of course, Jason has his own website too, jasonpeter.com. And Jason, one of the things we got to talk about is the College Football Hall of Fame, the ballot. It's all out right now. And I know a number of guys that are close to you are on that. And I was awfully happy and very proud to hear hear that Brian Bosworth, once again, he's on the ballot.
Yeah, the Bos is up. And
now, he was before my time, so I don't want to date myself here. So,
well, he's one of the guys that, as a kid growing up in New Jersey, where college football was not big, everything was NFL, New York Giants, Jets. The Bos is one of the things that I remember as a kid about college football, and you know, going out to the, for the coin flip with the mohawk and you know, the colors and the side of his head shaved in. And but obviously there's a lot of adversity that comes with Bos, so I don't know how voters feel. You know, it was certainly a different time back then in terms of steroid use. So, you know, I'm sure there were more guys using than just Bos. He was obviously the poster boy for the NCAA in trying to clean up that side of college football. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's a huge part of college football history, and I think he deserves to be there.
Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and it always seems like there's a new storyline each and every week. So, Jason, we'll look forward to talking some college football, and perhaps we'll even delve into some NFL as well. Okay, thanks, Jay.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead. The fastest hour in radio. We'll be right back.